like he's played the majority of the season injured. Like, he just hasn't been as dynamic, as threatening. And all the stuff that they have done over the course of the years where they motion him into the backfield and they're running him 6-7 times a game out of the backfield, and he's, you know, doing the reverses and the orbit sweeps and the jets, like all that stuff. It just feels like they're not doing that stuff, at the same level and the kind of the same frequency that they've always done it. And so that's always a concern for me, because he just doesn't look like the Deebo Samuel we've all been such a huge fans of.
Now back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
That was Mark Schlereth with on Deebo Samuel, and yeah, I mean, I think he's seeing, and what he said there was what all of us have seen as well with Deebo Samuel. One offensive touch, four targets, one catch. He had one drop that turned into the game-changing interception for the Packers. They returned it deep into Niners territory, quickly scored after that, and made it a 17-point lead. Game not officially over at that point, but it felt over, and then they quickly made it a 24-point lead, and then they ultimately win 38-10. It was bad news for Deebo Samuel and the 49ers there. That was Mark Schlereth. Last hour with us here on Willard and Dibs, but Mark, Randy, Lo Neal, and Jake Hutchinson with you. If you missed that conversation, available for you on the free Odyssey app. You can check it out on YouTube, everywhere you get your podcast as well. And we're going to ask Greg Cosell about Deebo Samuel as well. He's obviously straight up just, what does he see on the tape? And I'm curious to get his answer to the Deebo Samuel question. Obviously, Deebo has never been a guy that is great at, you know, route running and beating man coverage, but he's got to be seeing something that doesn't quite look like Deebo on tape, because there's no other explanation for what's happened to Deebo over the last like month or so.
Yeah, no question. Even again, as we talked about with poor blocking, Deebo just has not looked like himself, especially on those as Stink was talking about. You know, all those orbit motions and sweeps and stuff that Deebo typically. He waits and he's patient, and then he cuts it upfield. It's like he can't get the corner. It's like you watch, you know, DBs and linebackers all flow over, and you're watching them catch up to him in a way that with Deebo, he would cut it back, he'd make something else happen, and it's not the same speed. It's not the same level, I don't know, of aggression, what it is, but it doesn't look the same, and I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
It's very clear that, you know, something's going on with Deebo. And it's tough because, you know, it's hard to judge a man, and it's because, you know, you see what Deebo, the media, no comment, he walks away. So we know that he's frustrated. So, you know, there's anger there, even though, you know, instead of taking the high road and talk to the media, give them what they want and walk away. But when you can't answer, and when you don't want to stand up and be accountable, now you left it up to us to speculate. When you don't come out, and unfortunately sometimes say, you know what, just don't say nothing and it'll blow over. Sometimes that's good. They say, if you put a flame of fire, and it's going to – you flame a fire if you say certain things to make it flammable. But if you come out and say, hey, look, I got to do better. Hey, you know what, I can't drop those passes. Hey, I got to make an effort to, you know, concentrate more. Can't take my eye off the ball. Hey, you know what, I fell off. You know what, I'm looking and watching tape, and man, I'm looking and saying, hey, something's missing. I you know, I'm a train hard in offseason. Just give people what they want to hear, and they will leave you alone. But when you don't do that, it causes for people to have to speculate and put words in your mouth and say things that may not be true. And so Deebo's got to be able to say, look, I got to answer these questions. And I know Cal Shanahan and the media relations person, they're like, hey, look, this is what they're saying. Hey, Deebo, you want to answer this? How you handle? And maybe he's going to do it on a podcast. Maybe he's trying to drum up more people to come to his podcast and they can ask those questions. And maybe he's given a detailed answer on there. Don't know. But we do know is what we've seen. And what we've seen from Deebo in the last several years, it doesn't meet the eye test what we're getting now. And I think that's why people are frustrated. That's why we're all in here asking the questions, because what we've seen in the past is not what we've seen as the future of what we've seen this guy play. We haven't seen it.
Right. And it's we talked about the philosophy that their offensive line coach and run game coordinator Chris Forster laid out in the offseason, that they value guys who have the ball in their hands because they can make things happen even when it's not perfectly blocked. okay, things haven't been perfectly blocked. Go make something happen. He hasn't quite done it. And that's a test of their philosophy. And I think that's every single game this season has been a test of that. And as we've talked about, it's getting tested, and they might have to reevaluate that this offseason.
Yeah, probably should. Brian Baldinger on earlier today with Bonte and Shasky on the Morning Roast asked about Deebo Samuel. Here's what he had to say about his lack of involvement.
I mean, he's becoming more and more a gadget player than a receiver. And, you know, whether it's running him on a reverse or out of the backfield, that's where you kind of see his value. But if you're saying, okay, go beat Eric Stokes, you know, go beat Keyshawn Nixon, you know, in press man coverage, you don't see it. I mean, the quarterback can't wait that long. And then you're saying, okay, well, where's the man beaters? Green Bay wants to play a lot of man. For a while in that game they did. Yeah, you know, it's interesting, like the 49ers want to attack the middle of the field, and that's what the Packers are trying to take away. And that's why Xavier McKinney and Javon Bullard and Evan Williams are all there. They wanted great safety play, and that's what they got in that game. But guys aren't separated. And I said weeks ago that they look like a slow team, and that's how they look. That's how they play. You don't see speed from this group right now.
That's Baldy earlier today with Bonte and Shasky on the Morning Roast. First of all, saying Debo's looking more and more like a gadget player than anything else, and he's always been involved in the gadget plays. You just also have had chunks in normal pitch and catch, and those chunks haven't happened, and the gadget plays aren't working anymore. And if none of that is working, then you have to ask yourself, what is Deebo Samuel bringing to your offense?
Yeah, and you look at Deebo, and so many of the ways that he would get it, even when Jimmy was the quarterback, he would just run a drag, or they would have that Yankee concept where they have a guy basically run a post, and then they would have Deebo run the crosser over the middle, and because their run game was so effective, and they would run play action, they'd be able to get linebackers to come down, and they'd be playing zone coverage, and they throw it right over the middle to Deebo over the top, and then he'd run it,
right,
you know, for
right,
another 5, 10, 15 yards, or take it for a touchdown. And because teams have thrown so much man coverage at him, because their run game has been so inconsistent, a lot of those staple concepts that, you know, get things going, they just haven't been there, and they haven't been nearly what they were.
What's working? When you guys are saying, hey, look, this is not working, Deebo's not, well, what's working for you? Because I'm trying to figure out. You know, we've had some guys come on and talk about, hey, try to establish something common that you can do and have some success and go back to it, something to hang your hat on. In you guys' opinion, what have you guys seen from this offense with any consistency that's been working?
Targeting George Kittle.
Yeah, George Kittle's been working. You can rely on that. Yeah, George Kittle in the end zone, throw it up to him, but you're right. It's something where even in theory, the stuff that you expect to work, you can't count on it because guys are not either executing their assignment or there's a penalty or something else, or the talent isn't what it once was. And yeah, I'm not sure there's one thing that you can totally count on with this offense other than, you know, maybe an out route, Juwan Jennings, especially on third downs. If you're running a blaze out, that's been pretty good for him.
The rare handoff to Jordan Mason has been working.
That's what I think that Kittle, you've got to say Kittle, of course, if you give the more you get him involved, you know what he can do. He's been great blocking. He's been consistent. But if you said, what's the other thing that's worked for me this year? If you said, what's been the most consistent? I think it's probably Brock and probably Mason. If you're talking about, if you look at Jordan Mason's stint as a starter when he came in and took over, go look and see what's been more consistent than Jordan Mason. Now, I know Kittle, let's just say, okay, Kittle, put him in his own box because what he brings, blocking, creating, all this. But if you look, to me, it's Brock and Mason, in my opinion.
No
That's
question.
Been probably the most consistent week in and week out.
And on the point with Mason and McCaffrey and all that, you look at and some of these advanced stats can be wrong, but you look at the rushing yards over expected, which is, okay, this was not a well-blocked play. What can you do with it? Mason was like second in the league in rushing yards over expected, right up there with Derrick Henry for the longest time. I think he's still fourth after basically not playing for 3 weeks. McCaffrey and Deebo are close to the bottom of that list, and that speaks to the fact that, okay, stuff's not being blocked well, but you can still make something out of it, and I think that's why we keep bringing this up.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really good points. And if the Niners are going to get anything done this year, they're definitely going to need Deebo Samuel to help get that done. But they're staring at a 5-6 record, and they're going on the road Sunday Night Football against maybe the team playing the best football in the NFL right now, them and the Detroit Lions. Two teams playing the best football in the league at the moment. Going to be a huge, huge challenge for the Golden State Warriors. Okay, or pardon me, for the Niners. I'm thinking about the Golden State Warriors because we got Steve Kerr coming up at 5, and we got a little bit of news about Steph Curry. He has popped up on the injury report ahead of tomorrow's game against the Thunder. He is questionable with patella soreness in both his knees. So we'll ask Steve Kerr about that coming up at 5. But coming up next, Greg Cosell, NFL Films. He joins the show, and we'll ask him about Deebo Samuel and everything wrong with this 49er team right now. Valvoline Instant Oil Change is your 15-minute drive-through oil change. Visit their expert technicians to check fluids, tire pressure, windshield wipers, batteries, and more. Safe holiday travel starts at Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Locations and coupons at BayAreaOilChange.com. It's Willard and Dibbs with Grandy, Loneal, and Hutch. More coming up next here on 95.7 The Game.
Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Willard and Dibbs this week. They're off for Thanksgiving. They'll be back on Monday here on Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game. Sitting in for them today, yesterday as well. It's Mark Grandy, the great Loneal, one of the greatest fullbacks of all time. Jake Hutchinson, you read his stuff on 95.7 The Game, writing about the Niners and all things Bay Area sports. And now we have the opportunity to catch up, as we do every week here on this show on Willard and Dibbs, with the great Greg Cosell, NFL Films. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands? That's River Islands in Lathrop. Greg, happy early Thanksgiving. Thanks for taking up the time. As always, how you doing on this fine Tuesday?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing all right. Can't complain. We're trying to make sense of what happened to the Niners on Sunday in Green Bay. 38-10 was the final score. We've just been talking about Deebo Samuel. We had Mark Schlereth on earlier, and he's saying Deebo does not look like the old Deebo. We're thinking the same thing. What is the tape telling you? Specifically, the last couple of weeks, he only had one offensive touch in Green Bay. It was a trick play. He had a ball bounce off his hands or go right between his hands for an interception by the Packers that turned the game around. What is the tape telling you about Deebo Samuel? Does it still look the same, or is Deebo not the same player anymore?
What do you think? Let me ask you this. What do you think Deebo Samuel is as a player?
He's one of the more unique offensive weapons that we've seen in recent years in the NFL.
Right. What do you think his best traits are?
Ball carrying, breaking tackles, making defenders miss, and getting extra yards, more than you would expect.
Right. So he did that on a play. It was kind of a gimmick play, but that was the play. So he did that on a 21-yard gain. Deebo Samuel's not really relevant to the conversation as to what's going on with the 49ers. Deebo Samuel is a schemed player. Deebo Samuel is not a top-five receiver in the league in terms of twitchiness, route-running ability, ability to separate. He's a schemed player who has to be part of an offense. Deebo Samuel's not really relevant to the conversation. What happened on Sunday was, when you play with a backup quarterback and a quarterback that hasn't started a game since 2021, you need two things to happen. You need your offensive line to be dominant so your run game can be a factor, and you need your defense to play at a really high level. Neither one of those things happen. This game had nothing to do with Deebo Samuel.
Greg, I want to go back to the start of this game, the first drive in the first half. There was, I think the Packers ran it maybe three times where they had motion with Kraft, and then they had Reed go in sort of an orbit, and then there was a little pirouette from Jordan Love, and he'd hand it off to Josh Jacobs. I'm wondering, why were the Packers so effective running that play and a number of run plays against the 49ers?
Yeah, that was the second play of the game, was an 18-yard run, and they do what they've done much of the season, where they had Reed offset in the backfield, and then they send Kraft in motion across the formation, and then, as you said, Reed went into kind of orbit reverse action motion. There were a lot of moving parts and a lot of backfield action, and on that run in particular, it happened a couple of times. Both stacked backers, Warner and Campbell, they went on, you know, they reacted to all the action. So Jacobs was clean to the third level, where he made, you know, Brown miss in space. But that's one thing that the Packers have done really well all year. Reed is their movement player. They probably use motion top three, top four in the league, and they're real. And Reed's the motion player, so there's just so much action going on in the backfield. There's a lot of eye candy, and it plays with the discipline of second level defenders. And by the way, talking about the Packers, which relates to the Niners, I assume because of Allen playing quarterback, the Niners decreased the amount of motion and formation variation that they used in this game tremendously. I'm certain that has to do with the fact that Allen played quarterback. So they almost had to play somewhat of a vanilla game, and that's why the O-line was critically, critically important, and the O-line did not play well at all.
Greg, I couldn't agree with you more. Lo Neal here. Just watching this 49er team the whole year, something's been missing. I can't seem to put my hand on it. Doesn't seem like in the second half they can finish. Used to be the 49ers in the second half, fourth quarter, you just knew the running game was going to take over. You watched them against Arizona, 3 minutes left. Arizona, they're beating Arizona. Arizona took the ball and just drove it down. The inconsistency, the continuity, this team haven't beat a team over 500. What do you think has been the missing ingredients for just the sustainability of success, consistency?
Well, I think there's a number of factors, and in any given game, they can show up. And again, as you know, Lo, there's so many ways to play and win in the league. So when a team loses, everybody questions how they're playing. But, you can win multiple ways.
Sure.
So defensively, this is a team that has the second lowest blitz percentage in the league. Now, people can say, as they're listening to this, or as they may know, that, oh, you got to start blitzing because, that's what you got to do. Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. We don't know the answer to that. But the reality is, right now, they don't blitz very much. So they rely on their down for their defensive linemen to rush the quarterback, and they're a coverage-based defense. If you're not going to get pressure, and sometimes you don't, then you can be beaten in the pass game. I think the O-line this year has not played as well overall. I think even when Purdy's only missed one game up to this point, I think Purdy has not been as comfortable. Now, maybe it's because of the O-line. You'd have to get into his head, and he's not going to tell you. But I think Purdy has been a little quick to react and leave the pocket this year, which I think has impacted the consistency of the pass game. It's a highly schemed pass game. This is not a pass game built on the great play of one wide receiver. Now, obviously, Ayuk's a really, really good player, and he's gone for the year. So, yes, is he a miss? For sure, that he's not out there. But the pass game's not built on, hey, we better get the ball to Brandon Ayuk or else. That's not the way this pass game is. It's highly schemed off a ton of motion, a ton of run action, and that hasn't really been as big a factor this year because Purdy has not been as consistent in executing it that way.
Greg Cosell with us here on Willard and Dibbs, Greg Cosell of NFL Films. You've been complimentary of Nick Bosa in the past, Greg, even when he's not putting up crazy sack or tackle for loss numbers because he's just getting all the attention of the opposing offensive line and fullbacks and running backs that are chipping him and making his life miserable. Getting to see the Niners defense and specifically the run defense getting ran over by the Packers run game, Josh Jacobs and company, how big of an impact is Nick Bosa not being out there? What did you see from the Niners on tape and just how much they missed Nick Bosa on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's Bosa's obviously a great player, but I mean, there were too many runs in this game in which the 49ers D-line just got physically handled at the point of attack. They were beaten both in one-on-one situations. They were driven out by double teams. I'm sure Bosa would have had an impact on some plays, but he wouldn't have had an impact on every single play. It was just, this was an odd game for the Niners. They were physically beaten on both sides of the ball in this game, and it started with both lines. That's why I wasn't trying to be sarcastic about Deebo Samuel, but he had nothing to do with this game whatsoever. So, they were just beaten on both lines, and that doesn't usually happen. I mean, keep in mind that the Packers had 42 rushing attempts for 169 yards. I mean, I haven't looked at history, but I can't imagine in recent years that a 49er defense played against 42 rushing plays.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, you're probably right. I mean, they very even rarely give up 100 rushing yards in total, and they had that nearly at halftime, the Packers did.
Yeah, no, I think Jacobs was, 19 for 91 at the half, yep. So, and the Packers were also 6 for 8 on third down conversions in the first half. In the first half, I think the Packers ran for, I believe, 120 in the first half alone.
Greg, as far as the run game goes, How much of it, you know, I think in a game like this, people start to consider whether the wide nine in and of itself is a way to go going forward, or if they have the personnel to sort of use that every, and obviously they're not using it every single down, but I think it comes into question. How much do you consider that something to consider scheme-wise going forward, or a personnel issue?
You're talking about on their defensive front?
Yeah.
You know, that's a good question. I know there's a lot of teams that play that front, you know, as a base defense, and then they rely on their stack backers, and obviously Warner has been the best backer in football for a number of years. You know, I don't think this, he would probably say this past game wasn't his best game either, but, you know, that's the way they play. So the question, you know, you know how it is. When a team's been really good, and sometimes I think people forget how good the Niners have been. See, they haven't won a Super Bowl, so there are probably some people who think, oh, they're not good. But, I mean, they've been really good for a number of years. I would imagine, well, I know this for a fact because I've talked to coaches, not their coaches, I mean coaches over the years in my job. It's very difficult to decide to change something that has been really effective for a long time. Mm. I know fans think that's easy. Oh, just change. It's not working today. But, you know, that's a hard thing to do because you've been really successful doing it. So that's a hard question to answer. You know, I'm not smart enough, you know, to know the answer to that. Sometimes coaches don't know the answer to that. And they stay with something, it doesn't work. Or they change, and that doesn't work. So that's a hard question to answer.
Hey, I couldn't agree with you more. When you think about the run game of the 49ers, that zone stretch play, and you watch McCaffrey, it's usually one cut, north and south, get the defense moving, get you north and south. But of late, you just see him have to stop his feet. Pursuit can come backside and get him because now it's not one cut. It's I have to stop the cut in pursuit. What is going on, or what can they do, in your opinion? What do you think needs to happen as far as offensively, schematically, or just player-wise, to get this running game going? Because you know this team we saw in the playoff run the ball 40 times and only throw the ball 8. What seems to be the missing ingredients with the consistency in the run game?
Well, I think in the last couple of weeks, the O-line has not played very well at all. I mean, in this game in particular, because they tried to get McCaffrey outside, every time he cut downhill, there were three Packers who seemingly were unblocked.
Sure.
Just right there. You know, I know there's probably been a lot of talk about McCaffrey. I watched it very carefully. I even had my guys in the matchup room here at NFL Films take a look at it, and nobody thought that there was anything wrong with McCaffrey. Every time he made a downhill cut, and the reason he probably started to hesitate is he's looking for a gap. You know how those runs are. You kind of,
sure,
you don't have to just hit one gap. You kind of hit the, you know, when you see the gap, you hit it. And there was really no gap to hit. And I got to tell you, in this game, and I made this note, I thought that the Packers front six and their nickel defense played at a much faster speed than the 49er offense, both in the run game and rushing the quarterback. They just looked like two different speeds. And, you know, this was just a bad game. Now, the question is this, you know, is this a sign of things to come, or is this just a bad game, which, you know, can happen in the course of a 17-game schedule? But they just, they looked slow on both sides of the ball relative to the Packers.
I agree with you. I've been seeing that too. You're saying this, you're preaching to the choir here. When you look at moving forward, when you look at a team that possibly, I believe, is probably the best team in the AFC, the Buffalo Bills, and
yeah,
are now fighting for the playoff. Compare and contrast these two teams, and what are we looking for this week?
Well, the Bills have won 7 in a row. The Bills are really, they're as sound and solid fundamentally on defense as any team in the league, because they're not a high percentage pressure defense in terms of blitz, but they're so sound fundamentally, particularly in how they play on the back end. And they've got a really good linebacker in Terrell Bernard, who's turning into a really good pro. And Greg Rousseau is a pass rusher. I mean, he's going to be matched against McKivitz, and that's could be a little bit of an issue. And offensively, I mean, they've really worked hard to be balanced, and they're, I think, among the top 5 or 6 in the league in terms of run-pass ratio. But they've got a quarterback who's a playmaker. And the one thing that he's done this year is he's cut back on the turnovers. He's become, you know, a little more aware of game situations, because that's really what managing a game is. A lot of people think that, you know, being a game manager is a negative pejorative pejorative term. It's not. It's understanding every situation in the game and making sure you play to that situation. And I think Josh Allen has done a better job of that. But as we saw, you know, 2 weeks ago, he can always make those special plays in critical moments, and that can happen at any point in the game.
Greg Cosell of NFL Films with us here on Willard and Dibs, but it's Mark, Randy, Lo Neal, and Jake Hutchinson with you filling in for Willard and Dibs. You mentioned Josh Allen. Maybe there's another Allen starting at quarterback in this game, potentially, if Brock Purdy can't go. That's Brandon Allen, who got his first start in nearly 3 years on Sunday in Green Bay. Excuse me. You brought him up earlier today. Obviously, he's not Brock Purdy, but what did you see from Brandon Allen, and how is the Niners offense limited in what they are able to do with him at quarterback versus Brock Purdy?
Well, I thought overall he didn't play poorly. I thought the O-line didn't help him at all. There were a number of plays. I could, in just seeing the tape again in my mind right now, there were at least three plays in this game where there were wide open receivers on in-breaking routes and the pass protection broke down. And he just did not have security in the pocket to deliver the football. But, you know, I think the difference was, and if he has to start again, maybe it'll be different this week because he has another week of practice. But what stood out watching the offense was how limited it was from a formation and movement standpoint. There was significantly less formation variation and deployment of movement before the snap. I have to believe that was a function of Allen at quarterback. So if he's now going to be the starter and they know that, and obviously they don't have to tell us and they're not going to, but if it turns out that he's the guy who's going to take all the first team reps this week, my guess is they'll add to that because he'll just have, you know, a little more experience now with the offense and with the system. But it really did not look like the 49er offense, and they really struggled with their O-line.
Greg, just going to Ricky Pearsall here, you obviously spoke in past weeks of how you admired him. I couldn't agree more. I think he's potentially a really dynamic player, but I think the way the game went last Sunday, they couldn't really get the ball to him and operate the offense the way they wanted. He hasn't been targeted very much these last 2 weeks. What have you seen from him, and is there any reason for concern there?
You know, I don't think so. Again, I think it comes down to the fact that this offense at its core is really more scheme than built on individual players. So when it's working effectively, you know, I think, you know, it depends on the week, but guys get the ball. I mean, it's like when he scored the touchdown a few weeks ago on that 46-yarder, you know, that play wasn't called to say, let's get the ball to Ricky Pearsall. That's the way the defense played out on that particular play, and the ball went to him. I think that's the nature of this offense. It's not built around one guy, and certainly the last couple of weeks, the pass game has not looked like the 49er pass game. There were a few moments in this game where Allen kind of got into a little bit of a rhythm, but they were few and far between. You'd hope that this week, you know, if he plays again and takes all the first team reps, that he can get into a little more of a rhythm. But the run game has to, you know, it's so critical. It's not a matter of running for 200 yards, but it needs to be a sustaining element because you can't get caught in too many long yardage situations with Allen. You just can't. He hasn't played a lot of football.
No question. Just swinging it back to defense here for a second. I think Jair Brown is a guy that fans have had a lot of hope for, and there's been some inconsistency from him in terms of, is he sort of a foundational piece for them in the secondary? I'm just wondering what you've seen from Jair Brown, both as a coverage player and sort of triggering downhill to runs.
Yeah, I think he's really gifted. I think he's probably, you know, hasn't played as an impact player. Like, I think when you watch their defense, and since Mustafa's become the other safety, you see more sort of competitive toughness impact plays in the run game from Mustafa than you do from Brown. Now, again, that doesn't mean he's not a good player, but given his size, his physical attributes, his pure athleticism, I think they'd probably want to see a little more in terms of being an impact-type playmaker on the back end. So, you know, he's still a young player, so you're waiting for that. You know, they've got some young players in the secondary. I assume what happened this week. So was Renardo Green then benched late in the game? Was it a benching?
I think he had a minor injury, right?
He did have a minor injury late in the game, but I'm with you. If it was a benching, I think people asked that because it didn't look like his best game.
No, it didn't. But I think he's going to be a really good player. And, you know, I think sometimes what happens is people expect that guys are never going to make bad plays. You know, this is the NFL. Oh, you know this. This is the NFL. Guys, sure. You know, there's a lot of good players out there. You're not going to make a great play or even a good play on every snap. It just doesn't work that way. So, you know, I really like Renardo Green. And I think for the most part, he's played really well. Just like you're talking about Brown. You know, I think Brown has a lot of really strong athletic and physical traits. You know, we'll see how he develops. You know, we can't say he's not a good player because he's not been in the league long enough to say that.
Yeah. Greg, appreciate your time as always. We always love hearing your insights on everything Niners related, and we'll catch up with you again next week, okay?
Appreciate it, guys. Have a great holiday weekend.
Right. Thanks. You too. Thanks, Greg. That's Greg Cosell of NFL Films with us here on Willard and Dibs. Grandy, Lowe, and Hutch in for Willard and Dibs.
I thought he made some valid points. I think the biggest thing that I take away is the offensive line's not creating new line of scrimmage.
Yep. No question.
He sat there and he talked about, hey, look, everyone's talking about McCaffrey, and that's what I alluded to. I was telling you guys, and we all agreed that it's not McCaffrey. He has to stop, and there's two and three guys, and he's not able to break those tackles. And that's what we talk about. A guy like Jordan Mason is just, he's just going to go downhill and just try to run over guys. So we're saying the same thing. Here's a guy just saying this offensive line has underperformed, and he's saying they have to create a new line of scrimmage. He's talking about the passing game. It's not predicated on necessarily receivers. It's predicated on scheme. And the scheme is not working well, and he's talking about the scheme is not working well. Why? Because it starts up front with the crunch in the trenches.
That's...
We keep talking about building. If this team's going to get back to what it needs to do, it's got to build in the trenches, because this scheme is predicated on how well you can run the ball, and I've got to have the trench guys to make the scheme work.
No question. I love listening to Greg Cosell talk, just the way he looks at film. I don't think there's anyone that's not in, you know, on an NFL team that watches more than him. But yeah, I think it's something where you go into this week and when people want to say, okay, the Niners can turn this around. Okay, well, your fundamental problem is that your offensive line is not getting push in the run game, which is where you found this team. And you have no reason to believe that that's going to change, because you're running with the same guys out there, unless Trent Williams comes back. I honestly think Jalen Moore actually had a decent game. I don't think he was the problem. Obviously, it's not even remotely in the same atmosphere as Trent Williams. But you're running with the same, you know, left guard and center. And how is that going to suddenly improve and you're going to get all of these explosive runs that haven't been there for weeks?
Yeah, and I think to the point that we broke down yesterday, it's the same on the other side of the ball. We didn't have enough time with Greg. I was going to ask him about Fred Warner, but I'm sure he would feel the same way on the flip side, where Fred Warner's not the problem, just like McCaffrey isn't the problem. It's that Fred Warner's having to take on offensive linemen who are getting to the second level, when generally, when Fred's been at his best, you got your nose tackle taking on those guys, and then Fred's free to track down the ball carrier.
Right, and he also alluded to, he said, hey, look, defensively, he said, they're not getting it done either. He said Nicky Bosa wouldn't necessarily have the impact that we assumed that he would have had, because everyone else got beat elsewhere. So when you, and he talked about things that we've been talking about, he said, guys were getting pushed off the line. He said, guys were getting double teamed and getting pushed off.
If you can win one-on-one there, one-on-one there, one-on-one there, then you can put two guys on Nick Bosa and it won't matter.
And that's what he was talking about. He just said, you saw this defensive front get beat up. They got double teamed, creating a new line of scrimmage. He said the Packers pretty much had their way.
And folks, it's not a surprise. Teams know where to attack the 49ers. They're number one in the league. 57% of the time, teams run it inside on them. They know where to go, because you don't have to worry about their defensive tackles. And then you throw your offensive lineman, climb to the second level, and take out Fred Warner. And you can take your chances with a safety or Devondre Campbell or whoever else it is, because if you run it inside, there's not a lot of pushback from this team, and that's just fundamental.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs versus Devondre Campbell in space. I know who I'm taking.
No question, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. When you're playing against a dominant run linebacker that can run sideline to sideline, you run right at him because of the fact now you have to put a guy on him. When you run sideline to sideline, if you try to catch Fred Warner, you can't catch him because you've got to run sideways trying to catch Fred Warner. He's too fast. He's too quick. You're running full speed. He can dip, stop, cut underneath you. And that's why he makes offensive linemen look bad in space. That's why they're saying, okay, how do we stop Fred Warner from being great? run at him, double teamed nose guard, push up to him, scoop up to him, and now make him run a hump, make him run through a guy to make a tackle. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And listen, I think Fred's still playing really well. It's just we watched him play as genuinely a defensive player of the year for probably the first four games of the season. I watched him, I think it was this week, he carried somebody up the seam in the way that no other linebacker in the league can do. But so much is being asked of him to fill in the run game. It's just taxing. And with that ankle injury he had, I think it was against the Patriots, I'm sure that's worn on him too. Yeah. There's just a lot on his shoulders. And without Dre Greenlaw next to him, it's tough.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been more on Fred Warner's shoulders than there are right now. All right, time for a break. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. We are going to change gears to basketball in a moment. We've got Steve Kerr coming up in 17 minutes at 5 o'clock, but you also are going to want to hear what Deebo Samuel had to say. He spoke on his podcast. He defended Kyle Shanahan. The question came up, should Shanahan be on the hot seat? You're going to want to hear what Deebo Samuel had to say about that. That's coming up when we return. It's Willard and Dibs, Grandy, Low Neal, Hutch with you. More coming up next on 95.7 The Game.
Deebo Samuel's not really relevant to the conversation as to what's going on with the 49ers. Deebo Samuel is a schemed player. Deebo Samuel is not a top five receiver in the league in terms of twitchiness, route running ability, ability to separate. He's a schemed player who has to be part of an offense. Deebo Samuel is not really relevant to the conversation. What happened on Sunday was when you play with a backup quarterback and a quarterback that hasn't started a game since 2021, you need two things to happen. You need your offensive line to be dominant so your run game can be a factor, and you need your defense to play at a really high level. Neither one of those things happened. This game had nothing to do with Deebo Samuel.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
I mean, Greg's right. It had nothing to do with Deebo Samuel because the Niners didn't scheme him the ball. If he's a scheme player, then scheme him the ball. I should have followed up.
You should have came at him like that.
Why didn't they scheme him the ball? He got me flustered in the moment.
I can tell right now. Tell him how you really feel, bro. Tell him how you really feel.
Doing the thing of where you lose an argument, then you're in the shower, and you're like, I should have said this.
Now I know how Dibs feels every single week. This is what Greg Cosell does to Dibs, and now he did it to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with Greg. I think Deebo is, at this point in his career, he's much more limited. He's never been a he runs a limited number of routes, and he's run those, you know, not necessarily at an elite level, but he's so talented after the catch that it doesn't matter if he runs the most crisp route. He's got really good hands. He's really physical against contact, and so you could count on that. But he's right. He wasn't a factor in this game, and it wouldn't really, I think, have mattered because not much of that stuff was blocked up for anybody.
And the thing about where I kind of disagree with on some of the things he said, because I played with guys that's not necessarily great route runners or great separation guys. There's a guy that you guys knew that friggin' didn't necessarily separate, but he could kill you with his route running and just his physicality. He only needed a space. You got to just get it to him. You got to just get him the ball. And you think about one of the best receivers, you know, played with the Minnesota Vikings, Chris Carter. Mm. It wasn't like he separated. It was just like you could throw it anywhere and he would just grab it, and he was just so physical and he was strong. Played with another guy, Eric Martin. Went to LSU, played with the Saints. Eric Martin, he wasn't necessarily going to separate and create big space, but I was a rookie just watching this guy's how big his hands were and just the what he could do, and kind of like that Deebo. But Deebo brings that run after catch. That's what those guys couldn't do. Chris Carter, catch a ball, but that run after catch, that's what we're known for, and that's what he's known for. And you just haven't seen it with the consistency that you used to see in it with Deebo. But this game is, and I think when you listen to the last gentleman we had on again, his Cosell, it was more about, it's not necessarily Deebo, it's the whole thing, what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You've been talking about, you know, Granny, it's not just one thing. it's a plethora of things that makes that's not going right for this team. So really, no one can showcase who they really are.
Yeah, yeah, and
especially at the skill position.
Yeah, and you get all those things together, and then you start having people asking questions about Kyle Shanahan and his future, and that became a topic on Deebo Samuel's podcast, Cleats and Convos via Bleacher Report, and this is what Deebo Samuel had to say about his head coach Kyle Shanahan.
We can harp on like injuries, but at the end of the day, that's a part of the game. Other than that, you can't show me a losing season that he's had since I've been here. First year Super Bowl, second year, I mean, COVID hit. Year after that, you know, NFC Championship. Year after that, NFC Championship again. Last year, Super Bowl. So it's like, why are you saying he in the hot seat? At the end of the day, we 5-6 right now, but I mean, we got like 6-7 games ahead. And at the end of the day, like, Kyle is one of the smartest, you know, most player, you know, you like those player coaches that, you know, mm-hmm. people could ask for. And so I don't kind of get in the, you know, he in the hot seat, he this, he that. But at the end of the day, like, you can't show me a season where he had a losing season well since I've been in the league. And I just look at it from, you know, me going in the building every day. Just see his approach to the game, even though, like, we kind of behind the eight ball right now, but he don't look at it that way. He's
right.
Like, if he can start it all over again, this is where he'll want to be.
It is interesting that Deebo said he's never had a losing season and then shrugs off the 2020, where it actually wasn't COVID, it was really injuries, and
yeah.
Said, well, injuries don't matter. I get it. I also, for the most part, agree. Like, again, I've made my point that Kyle shouldn't be in the hot seat. He's built this thing. He communicates really well. That's one other thing I wanted to mention is players like him, and the reason players like McDaniel, who wouldn't have never gotten a shot, you know, decades ago, because they're small guys, they've got weird dispositions, sort of sarcastic, it's because they're with Kyle, and players now really appreciate the fact that you can communicate, and you don't have to scream and chew them out, as I'm sure, Lo, you've experienced that, but these modern coaches, they're more teachers than they are yelling at you, and kind of the way they are. I get it, and I think it works a little better.
Oh, yeah. I had Bill Parcells, the big tuna, yell at you. Friggin' Marty Schottenheimer, you'd be scared to death of those guys frothing at the mouth and slobbering. You're like, oh, my goodness, this guy's going to knock me out. Man, I've had some great coaches. Jim Moore, pass! I mean, Jim Moore, I mean, dude, you didn't know what he was capable of. I mean, it just goes back. I mean, that old school coaches, Jim Sweeney, you know, from Brute, Montana, he'd always say, my father was a gold miner. I mean, this guy punched guys in the face and knock them out. So, I mean, I've had some tough coaches. And now coaches, you know, I understand Kyle Shanahan and a lot of these coaches you're talking about, they are players' coaches, and they understand that. But those tough coaches, they were player coaches in their own right, too. And it was a different way of coaching. You know, we continue to evolve. But this is not about Kyle Shanahan getting fired. It's about Kyle Shanahan being able to say, look, how do I press reset? How do I adjust now? How do I come back and change this thing? How do I reinvent myself? And not necessarily reinvent myself. What coaches am I going to go out that's going to be elite coaches? Who am I going to go after this offseason as a special teams coach, as a DC, that I can just entrust that, hey, look, maybe we're going to go through a building process again. Maybe we're going to have to change players to get the right players in here for to fit this scheme. But I know one thing. Offensively, I know what this offense can work because I know the guys that I have in the skill position. Now I got to address the trenches because I can't spend any more money. I got to let people walk. I can't spend any more money at these skill positions. I have to concentrate on the trenches because that's what makes the engine go. It's like Paul Revere. Listen, my children, you should hear of the midnight parade of Paul Revere. It was the 17th of April, 75. Hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. Said to his friends at the British shore march, but one by land and by two by sea, I on the opposite shore will be ready to ride, ready to ride and spread the word. I could keep going, but I digress. But Paul Revere wouldn't have been able to tell him that the British is coming if he didn't have the horses. You got to get the horses. That's where I was going with that.
Great analogy.
That was fantastic.
Great analogy. Yeah, and you're right. And that's going to be the challenge for the 49ers going forward. Another team facing a little bit of a challenge right now is the Golden State Warriors as we change gears just a little bit to get ready for Steve Kerr coming up in about 4 or 5 minutes here on Willard and Dibs. But it's Mark Randy, Lo Neal, and Jake Hutchinson with you. The Warriors coming off of consecutive losses in San Antonio on Saturday where they led by 17 points late in the third quarter. You lose that game by 10. And then last night at home here against the Brooklyn Nets, who kind of off to a surprisingly decent start so far this year. But Warriors, a better team at this point. They led by 18 points in the third quarter and lose that game by 8. So consecutive big leads blown in the second half of these basketball games. The Warriors now are sitting at a point where they've lost consecutive games for the first time all season. It's still a very good start to the year at 12-5, but these last two games have left a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth, and we're gonna ask Steve Kerr all about it coming up here in a few minutes.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think without Jonathan Kuminga missing the last two games with illness, and now you got a question mark with Steph and DeAnthony Melton, it felt like they were sort of gelling, right? Everything was feeling good, power, friendship, you know, all these guys, deep rotations, everyone's working, everybody's playing hard, and then you have two losses to teams that you should probably be beating, and now you've got a kind of tough schedule coming up before you get into that play-in tournament again. It's interesting. It'll be really interesting to me to see how they respond against Oklahoma City, whether Kuminga comes back, because as much as, you know, you can rightly or wrongly criticize Kuminga, you really wish you had him in these last two games for at least some of those minutes, especially in the third and fourth.
What do you think a lot of that is due to? When you see a team like the Warriors go out and say, okay, look, we're going to go deep bench. We're going to rotate everyone in. We're going to let everyone get their touches, and we're going to let them play limited amount of minutes, and this is how we're going to have a great year. Is that sustainable, one? And it's two, is these last two games, everyone talks about a letdown because you're playing a team that you should have beat. You're better than, and you're like, okay, this is just going to be a good tune-up game, and it falls in your face. Is that lack of talent? Is that just being mentally not prepared to play? Is that just saying, hey, overconfidence? What are you guys, when you're looking at this basketball team, you know this team's not necessarily have a bunch of superstars. Of course, we know Steph Curry is a superstar, but then you just have guys in other areas. What does that a lot of that contribute to, I wonder?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I chalked up the San Antonio game on Saturday, just third game in four nights. It's a back-to-back, the first road back-to-back of the year. You're playing a young, athletic San Antonio team. They got Wemby, and obviously we know how special he is. So you blow that one, all right, you're up 18 or 17 in that one, but, you know, you got an older team with veterans all over the place, you lose that one, okay, and then you travel back home in a similar story against the Brooklyn Nets. So we'll ask Steve Kerr all about it. We got him on the line right now. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union for a low-rate auto loan. Apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer. And now let's go out to the River Islands guest line, because it's time for Coach Kerr, presented by Great Clips. In sports, success is about team effort, and the same is true for your hair. Great Clips, it's going to be great. Coach, welcome on to Willard and Dibs as always, but no Willard and no Dibs. It's Mark Randy, Loneal, and Jake Hutchinson with you. First of all, happy early Thanksgiving. Thanks for taking off the time. How you doing today, Steve?